Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I clicked four things to buy a drink, and now I have to be polled on my ordering experience. How dare you? 1 to 5 stars. I don't know, 2. I guess nobody rubbed my feet.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Sounds like it went seamlessly.
That's between me and you, and me and me.
Yeah.
I'm not telling them how my ordering experience was. I'm losing my mind. That's basically the bottom line here. I'm losing my mind. Anyway.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Still waiting for the final whistle in this second World Cup semifinal. Twitter doesn't seem to like how England has played this today. I haven't been able to watch it that closely. And, you know, I'm Mr. Soccer, so my opinion would have strong weight, would deserve strong consideration. But Twitter seems to think that England, which was up 1-0 for much of the second half, got too conservative. Maybe even subbed in some of the wrong guys. And after a couple of those changes, just became nonstop Argentina offense. And ultimately, 2 goals. When I have looked up, and we've had some stoppages here, we've had some hydration breaks on this show, it has been all blue team. But they're still playing, 1:01 on the clock, 2-1 Argentina. I had that pool. There it is. Now it's final. Argentina and England, a lot of history, a lot of political, geopolitical rivalry stuff with England and Argentina. I don't know if England hates Argentina, but Argentina, I think, really hates England or the British. Well, what happens when you're in a pool, you're in a contest, or, you know, I'll draw up something similar to this. I was tracking toward a pretty big win, but needed France and England. And then France loses yesterday, so there goes that. And today I've kind of been sitting here thinking, I kind of hope England loses too, because that'll take a little bit of the, you know, the sting off. Not sure it really should. And I was hoping England would win otherwise. But, you know, it's like a little bit like, would you rather lose a game by 1 point or 30? You lose by one, heartbreaking. Sabres, Canadians. You lose a series like that, any one play could have tipped it. And, you know, that really hurts. You lose big, Carolina, Philadelphia, Carolina, Montreal. What can you do? Hat tip. Better team won, wasn't me. The ones you lose by an inch, by a goal, by a point, that's 13 seconds, that's Alex Newhook. I mean, there's so many. You don't need me to list them. You don't even want me to. That's this AFC Championship game we talked about earlier with our guest, Ryan Paganetti, where the Bills lose in Kansas City 32-29. Anything like that. Just, you know, as painful as it is, the chief rivalry offers you really a test at this. Because that first year, the one that baffles me still, that the Bills were just so not competitive in that game in 2020. I mean, they got pretty much trounced in that game. And what you don't do when that happens is spend your time talking about play calling. You know, we did a little bit of that, not play calling, but there were a couple of wimpy short field goals in that game by the Bills, and they ended up just getting boat raced. So you had some of it, but when it's a blowout, not that that was quite a blowout, but when it's a blowout, you really just don't bother with, you know, what ifs. There's no point. But these heartbreakers, it's all you do forever, is scrutinize, why didn't we do this? And how about our guest earlier? And he tweeted this the other day. It was a funny timing. Like, I had just chosen to follow him on Twitter. I'd never heard of him before, Ryan Paganetti, before listening to a Scott Barrett podcast. I'm like, oh, this guy's really interesting. So I clicked follow, and then he followed me right back, or something like that. And he said, I thought when I tweeted that Bill stat that I might catch your eye. And I'm like, I didn't even know what he was talking about. But I liked him. And the stat was, anybody on this, did you know this before it was exposed by the Chiefs after that AFC Championship? I did not. I don't remember thinking this one time. that between, Ryan said, week 10 of 2022 and that game in Kansas City that ended the 24 playoff season, the Bills ran 70 quarterback sneaks all to the left. And you didn't notice it, if you didn't, because almost never were they stopped on those plays. And that, this is really a fun topic for anybody that really watches the NFL and is a, you know, has a good mind. Like, what else is there to exploit? Who knew that the Bills probably didn't, or were they just laughing, you know, to themselves for 2.5 years because nobody could stop their quarterback sneak even when it all looked the same? Ryan did point out that, by the way, that what the Bills did in lining up on most of those plays gave them a look where they could actually run a real play. And they weren't all going to be on fourth down, of course. So if you go play action and throw incomplete, then you still have the same 1 yard to get on the next play. And maybe your sneak rate is so good, anybody's is, that you just do it then. But he liked that about their quarterback sneak. He's like, just 2.5 years straight of running only to one side is kind of insane. But my mind races with this. Like, what else is out there? And we're not in football mode here yet. I know that. We don't have games to sort of think about and talk about and scrutinize. And, it, you know, this is obviously the off season. But you might have a thing that bothers you or just interests you, makes you curious about, like, why is it always like this? And yours could be very different than anything I think of. And, you know, these kind of opportunities to brainstorm could have served us well in the last couple of years if you or I would have been the only person out here going, you know, they only run quarterback sneaks to one side. And last year, maybe that changed because Ryan didn't tell us that continued through last season. I don't know. But it's pretty nuts that you could do that and get away with it. Basically, he's like, what did he say? 10 years ago, there were 70 quarterback sneaks, and last year there were more than 300. And I'm like, yeah, Ryan, and some of those weren't even quarterbacks. He's like, yeah, you're right, 46. He had the exact number, like right at hand, you know, just 46 quarterback sneaks or sneaks taken by non-quarterbacks on plays last year. And close to automatic. Do we want more? We tried to ban the tush push and couldn't. Do we want more? Everybody just sort of lines up like a rugby scrum and pushes each other for 1 yard. That's not exciting, but it might be efficient. And he also had some great numbers on field goals and I didn't write this one down, but some, maybe 2000, maybe the year 2000, there was one field goal over 55 yards in the NFL in the whole season. And last year it was like 70 some, did he say? So now you kick off. Last year we had more run backs. I know a lot of this isn't fresh. It isn't for me either. I'm just sort of going. You had more kickoff returns. And so teams getting the ball around the 25, you know, something like that. And two good plays, you're to midfield. Not even great plays. One great play, you're to midfield. And now we're in a league where, unless they change the rule again, those field goals are not that hard from there, from midfield. He talked about, and we did hear this last year, how teams were for the first time allowed to massage, let's put it that way, massage the K-balls and work them over to get them to the kicker's liking. And that made a big difference in field goal success. I don't know. Do we want more of that? I don't think we do necessarily. Just how the game evolves is so interesting. Who knows what'll be different this year, if anything, in terms of the sort of in the background. We didn't all know about the K-balls thing until, you know, you might have had to find out. You might have had to look hard for that information, or somebody just kind of reported it one day. Maybe it wasn't something they wanted out. I don't know. But the balls in baseball is always a big topic and how they always seem to be changing. And we have that again this year. There's more controversy about the makeup of the baseballs and what frustrates pitchers, if not players, if not everybody in and around the sport, is this just the total lack of transparency about it. that's the one for all the data. I mean, the mountains of data that there is for teams to try to find an edge, anything. The one thing they can't seem to ever know about is the balls. You know, it's a little bit a conspiracy kind of talk, but I think it's probably true. I mean, you have marked differences year to year sometimes in home runs and, I mean, all kinds of the other more advanced statistics. So, that's one where you and I don't get access to knowing what they're actually doing, which is criminal. It needs to be addressed. Thank you. Frank is next. Hello.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Okay.
I'm just wondering how much of a difference DJ Moore would actually make for the Bills when it seems like offense is usually an issue. I mean, offense usually wasn't the issue, but it seems like defense is really kind of like leaving us wide open gaps sometimes in games. But I'm kind of wondering, is this all we've seen from Shakir, or can Shakir really take the next step and elevate his game this season? Because I think there's a lot to give for that player, but I'm still conflicted about the whole offense versus defense thing, because I'm nervous with Jim Leonard being the first year as our defensive coordinator, and I'm just thinking there may be a little bit of transition time. I don't know. Just get your opinion on that. Have a great day.
You think they should not have invested in DJ Moore and instead invested in a defensive player? Is that what the bottom line here is?
Yeah, I kind of feel that way. Okay. Not necessarily just because of, like, I know our offense was lacking, but I feel like Shakir could have been more of that player. But then maybe it's just because of injuries that held him back, and that's why he's not that player. But I think our defense has been lacking those past few seasons.
Well, that's not true. I mean, their defense has been good to great consistently for the last few seasons. That doesn't mean that has to be true this year. I don't think it's really either or. I mean, they have made several moves on defense, and that's probably good. They got old. And some of those guys that they moved on from didn't even sign anywhere else yet, or haven't. Even like Milano and Trey White, like I think they're still free agents, unless I missed that during my time off. So that says something. They needed to enter that transition phase. And I think it's probably smart to do that to the best extent that you can with the coaching change, so that you're not square peg round holing it with guys. Like, go about bringing in types that fit the way your coach wants to run it. So you've got a new, you know, leader in that, in Leonard, and, you know, likewise new players. I DJ Moore, man, in terms of Shakir, I don't think there's anything more. I think you've got a good, useful player that is limited and thus limits what the upside of the offense is, which is, I think it sounds to say that, and I often do, but I, you know, with James Cook, I would talk about, I guess, you know, scoreboard on this. I mean, you've got the literal league's rushing leader now, but with James Cook, I'd always be like, yeah, he's fine. And often, usually, fans would be like, what? He's only fine? Like, we've had those arguments a few times. Shakir is, it's different. It's not fine because you've got a player that is basically your number one receiver. Last year, he caught 72 passes. Second most was 39, Kincaid. Kincaid was second on this team in catches last year in 12 games. 39. So Shakir is like your security blanket go-to guy. He's not huge. He's not late-stage Larry Fitzgerald or somebody that can just post up, run after the catch guy, and you got some big plays out of him. But I just always kind of think that the whole idea here is flawed, that you've got your most important pass catcher is kind of capped in terms of talent. Not going to, you know, score touchdowns for you. At four last season. Kincaid led them in receiving touchdowns with five. Again, amazing. To me, anyway. So Shakir's ceiling is low. And I don't think there's a player in there. He's not going to grow or get faster. I don't think there's a player in there that, you know, elevates from that point. Enter DJ Moore. And I just need to see it. Now, he has been in the league a long time, and you could be like, just look at it then. If you need to see it, just look at it. but it's mixed. And it doesn't, even though I think they did great in the trade, Chicago, with the Bills. How about that? The Bills traded with the Bears, and the Sabres traded with the Blackhawks. And I think both teams, both trades were really one-sided. The Bears killed the Bills in the DJ Moore trade, I think. Although the Bills get DJ Moore. The Sabres killed the Blackhawks in the Byram trade, although the Blackhawks get the player. You know, it's almost like it's the same trade in reverse. Not really, but, you know, same two cities. I'm just not a big DJ Moore fan, really. And before he was traded to the Bills, you know, and all the fantasy stuff I'm doing, and if his name ever came up in the course of our conversations, which it would have, you know, maybe in the playoffs or at different various times, the time he was traded by the Panthers in the big trade where the Bears got Caleb Williams. DJ Moore was involved in that. A team that traded, I mean, they it was also involving the number one pick. It's no small trade. Doesn't have to look bad on him exactly, but, you know, a good young player that the team moved on from in terms of Carolina. I just think there are a lot of questions about what we're getting in this player. You know, he's had a good career. He always has the excuses made for him about not having good enough quarterback play. But then Caleb Williams rolled around, and Moore was just not – what was he in terms of targets on the Bears last year? I'm going to go look. Because there was a decline in his statistics last year, Moore. 50 catches, which was second on the Bears to Loveland, 47 for Luther Burden, who didn't play as much. 44 for Roma Dunze. So kind of spread out, and it's not massively big. I'm not at a point yet. I want to get into football season, and it might have to wait until, other than like what reporters are saying and what coaches are saying and even players are saying, it might have to wait until games start, regular season games start, to see like what did the Bills sign up for here in this player? Big money. Big draft capital to get him. And, you know, what's the premise? What's the thesis of the play here? That we can get maybe a little bit back to not quite peak Stephon Diggs, but finally, right? Finally bring in a player that can threaten. Because Shakir doesn't really threaten, other than Allen and I guess Cook as a running back. Not that he catches the ball really at all. It's really about in the running game. It's not a threatening group, other than the fact that Allen can kind of do anything and make anybody that guy in a given moment. But you're not scared of the Bills' weapons. And so Moore is some effort to remedy that. And I think for a guy who's been in the league, what now? This will be his ninth season? I think it's just okay. I think probably you've got a player who will make some plays for them. He shouldn't be a disaster. I mean, he should have the most important role at his position on the team. That seems likely, safe to assume. And so you want to see what? What do you want to see for DJ Moore? 8 targets a week? Is that enough? 8 targets a week is going to be 120 targets for the season. I mean, that's way more than he had last year. It's not a career high. It wouldn't be a career high for him, but I think that that's about commensurate with what you paid for here. And with Allen at quarterback, you've got to think you can make that work to some extent anyway. To what extent, we'll see. I mean, I'm not going to worry about catchable balls with Josh Allen as the quarterback, although with Kincaid, that's been a weird thing. Like that hasn't always been a given that the ball is right where it needs to be. Then that might not be Allen's fault necessarily, but those were some strange numbers, maybe 2 years ago now, on Kincaid, like catchable ball rate. But DJ Moore went from 96 catches to 98 catches to 50 last year. And I don't hear people specifically talking about that they saw a decline in him. We've had Chicago guests, we've had Sal, and he's talked to people about him, and I have my own fantasy stuff where everybody on that side of it seems always necessarily lukewarm on DJ Moore. But it's not, I don't hear people saying that it's because they think he slipped. I think there might just be only I don't even know how I want to say it yet. I just know I hear a lot of pessimism about him, and it doesn't have to work out that way. There's the potential that Moore, as the Bills number one, can really have a huge season. I mean, 2 years ago with Chicago, much to his credit, 2023, so 3 years ago with Chicago, career highs in catches, well, for then, and then he broke that record the next year, 96 catches, 1,364 yards, 8 touchdowns. I mean, I'd sign for that. We'd all sign for that right now, right? 96, 13, 64, and 8. That, I mean, easily. The next year, 98, 966, and 6. Not terrible. Yards per reception dipped significantly. You saw that. You hear that in the numbers. The catches go up a little bit, but the yards are down by 400. And that's Caleb Williams' difficult season where he was sacked all the time, kind of a dysfunctional Bears team. Then last year, Williams kind of takes off, but DJ Moore plummets. He dropped 400 yards from 2023 to 2024, and then another 300 yards the next year. 700-yard dip, half of two years prior from him. Big curiosity. In fantasy, he goes, for what it's worth, around guys like Mike Evans, who is now with San Francisco, Jameson Williams with Detroit, maybe a little bit after DJ Moore. Carnell Tate, the rookie for Tennessee, goes in the same kind of range usually, or a little bit after DJ Moore. Odunze with the Bears. Davante Adams is another one that all get drafted. It's like the fifth round, sometimes the sixth round. So it's not like being traded to the Bills meant a ton to his fantasy stock. But there is reason to imagine, as the Bills' number one, that he pays that fantasy price off pretty easily. We're all hoping, right? That's 96, 13, 64, and 8. I mean, I think I would take a lot less than that even, but that would be great. That's the age 26 season in 2023. Yeah, one of the more interesting storylines of the Bills this year will be DJ Moore. The Open Championship starts, I don't know, tonight? It's time different. Tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, middle of the night. I doubt I'll get up for those early, well, no names that usually start these Open Championships. No offense. I didn't make it, so I'm impressed. Anyway, so that's tomorrow. We have our Pick 10 contest here again. Love it. It's my turn this time, so I better get right now, take a hydration break, and go finalize these picks. And then Brian Koziol, and I think Bulldog also will join me, and we'll hash all this out. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.